Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Simon Thomas, the CEO of London's Hippodrome Casino, to talk about the property's recovery from the pandemic and plans for the future. Today's podcast is sponsored by IGT, where the cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold and is named Best Slot Product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. Get this top performer on your floor. Learn more at IGT.com/prosperitylink. Mama, try to break me, and I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life a luxury. London's Hippodrome Casino was one of the most unique in the world. With a history dating back over a century, the Hippodrome was a theater for most of its existence, hosting such events as vaudeville shows, circuses, aquatic extravaganzas, nightclubs, and more. When Simon Thomas and his father Jimmy, who recently passed away, took over the property in 2009, they embarked on a complete restoration project that transformed the building into what it is today, one of England's finest casinos. Simon Thomas sat down with me at G2E in October to talk about the past and the future of the Hippodrome. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Simon Thomas from the Hippodrome in London. Simon, great to see you on this side of the pond for a change.
It is so nice to be here. I tell you, I've missed G2E the last couple of years for obvious reasons. And it's just lovely to see everybody back in three dimensions.
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, condolences on the passing of your father. He was such a legend in the London gaming scene, and he built up the Hippodrome into what it is today, and you're doing well keeping it going. So condolences on that.
All right, thank you. It's strange, actually, because the last few years, as he was slowing down, he used to come out to the Vegas Strip, and it was really quite hard work.
Sure, right.
Get him to keep up with us. Now he's not here. I really miss him.
Yeah, for sure. I remember I met him first when you guys came 4 or 5 years ago. And he's a great guy. I really enjoyed talking to him. He had a lot of stories, right?
Oh, yes. Lots of stories. At his memorial, I gave a tribute. And one of the lines I used was, to cut a long story short, and I'm sorry, I must be mistaken, are words that have never troubled my father's lips.
That's right. That's funny. Well, he was a great guy. So let's start off with how you got through the pandemic. I mean, it was tough here in the U.S., but every time I looked over in the U.K., they were shutting things down, and it looked like a really difficult time.
Yeah.
How difficult was it for you?
It was horrid, bluntly. Over the 420 days between first lockdown and final reopening, we were closed by the government for 320. And of the other 100, we had severe restrictions such as curfew and other mad restrictions for 60 of the days. So what we found, though, every time we were allowed to reopen, business came back really quickly.
Yeah.
And the COVID journey for us was quite interesting because in true Hippodrome style, we turned it into an opportunity.
Yes.
It started off stage one. Oh, my God, we're going to go bust.
Right.
£2.5 million salary, monthly payments, no income.
Yeah.
Doesn't go long. Then stage two, I suppose a confidence. The government couldn't let every business go bust, and they were kicking in with curfew. And we had a strong balance sheet, great relationships with our suppliers, our bankers, etc. So we realized we were able to get through it and would find a way through. And then stage three was the really interesting one. It was we're shut. What could we do now that we couldn't do before because we were open 24/7?
Right.
And so we brought forward quite a lot of ambitious building projects and future-proofing the building.
Okay.
We replaced all our air conditioning.
Uh-huh.
We added another floor on the top of the building. We moved and refurbished all our poker rooms. And slightly opportunistically, the last two bits of the building that we didn't control, which are two shop units on the front, they became available, should we say, because they went bust. And we managed finally to get hold of them. And that's caused a bit of a Tetris in the building, sort of bits moving left, right, and center.
Okay.
So we moved our back of our lounge. We took the bottom half of one of these units, and it just opened 11 days ago as a Chinese restaurant called Chop Chop. And the other one, we're opening a cafe on the front in about 2 weeks' time. and then a secret bar in the basement in about 2 months' time.
Okay.
So it's given me control of the whole front.
Yeah.
And then equally, through being forced to restrict capacity, it wasn't worth us playing to the lower end of the market when we could only allow half our customers in. So we increased our minimum spend. And I think in hindsight, we realized that we'd been underpricing ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we've come out of it in an incredibly strong position with much higher minimum spends. We've moved some of the lower end roulette play onto the electronic terminals, so they're doing well as well.
Okay.
And the speed of game and the average stake on the roulette and blackjack now is materially better. So we've come out of it really, really strongly.
Great,
so
great.
Having fun, finally. It was horrid, though.
Yeah, it sounded like a real difficult, especially, I mean, it's over a year you get closed down. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, it was the managerial challenge was the biggest one, because there was so many emotional highs and lows to manage people through.
Right.
And to build people up ready for reopening and get the enthusiasm and drive back,
right,
and also their training skills.
Sure. So how did your employees endure it? Did you stay in touch with them through the whole process?
Yeah, we had a pretty active program. We obviously, like many businesses, had to make some redundancies. So we did that very early on.
Sure.
But the rest of the employees, we had regular communication by email, by podcast, by live Q&A with me. And as we were doing building works in the building, I was sort of buzzing around the building, with showing them what was going on with an iPhone camera.
Sure, okay.
And it's all a bit crazy.
Right.
Our hospitality team were doing weekly food and drink sessions online.
Great.
So I think we did pretty well.
So when you reopened, did they all return?
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Staff, excellent. But customers were just incredible.
Yeah.
We opened on a Monday morning at midnight, or Sunday night, Monday morning.
Sure.
And we had built it up as much as we could. We had some outdoor bars, which we were allowed to use at that point. So we filled them full of customers.
Sure.
And it turned out to be the most awful night. It was drizzling with rain. And two or three film crews, Sky and ITV and people like that, to witness the reopening. I'd put some big mock chains over the front door, and I had bolt cutters to cut them open. I thought, oh God, this is going to be a damp squid. There's going to be a few drowned rats outside. It's going to look really underwhelming. And I went outside to do the reopening, and the queue stretched about 250 yards.
Really? Wow.
So it was wonderful.
Wow.
And I kind of wanted it to be like the opening day of the sales, where everybody rushed in.
Yeah.
And it sort of, we still had to show QR codes for COVID testing and all sorts of nonsense. So it's kind of dribbling at people. But we got off to a really good start, and it's continued strong ever since.
Okay. So you didn't have to do anything special to attract the customers back. There was a lot of pent-up demand.
Enormous pent-up demand. Yeah. People gagging to get out again. The COVID-shy people didn't come out, but hey-ho, nothing we would have done would have got them
course,
to come out.
Right. But there was a lot of people there that were not COVID-shy.
Yeah.
Same here in the States. So let's get out and have fun and get back to normal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold, named the best slot product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. A top game performer since being released, Prosperity Link features the player favorite lock and respin bonus and the exciting free games bonus with either scatter or multiplier wilds. Prosperity Link will drive players to your floor with its popular game mechanics. Grab this exciting game while it's hot. Learn more at igt.com/prosperitylink. In the meantime, you had some other problems with the government, where they were coming up with this study of the gaming industry in the UK, and it looked like it was going to be pretty bad, you know, when they came out with their recommendation, but now it's kind of put aside here. Where does that stand now?
Where we are with it now, they did a call for evidence, and obviously the people very pro-gambling gave their evidence, people very anti-gambling gave theirs, and nobody really bothered in the middle.
Yeah.
And we are certainly going to have a white paper, which will lead to some change in the legislation.
Sure.
I think with the new Prime Minister being much more libertarian, any of the more extreme ideas will be curtailed.
Right.
Given we've had two or three delays on it, it's given us time to have much better dialogue with the regulator
right.
and our government department. So from the land-based casino side, it was always going to be a good move. We have been hamstrung by old regulations and limiters to 20 slot machines in a casino. Peak time, I've got 1,500 customers in the building.
Right.
Queues of people in slot machines, frustrating as hell.
Yes.
I can't service the customer demand.
Right.
So that looks very likely to happen,
yeah.
Finally. We've been pushing for some electronic versions of table games, which are really good because customers want it. They want to play at their own pace. They want to play at a lower stake.
Sure.
And we've had the opportunity to convince the regulators, I hope. And then the other two asks we wanted were more freedom for electronic payment. It's really future-proofing. The evidence in Vegas is people still pay with cash. Resort World tried to be cashless.
Right.
It's sort of gone back a stage. I think it does a good cashless solution, but it's also very cash-friendly.
Right, right.
But we don't want to be left out in the cold as cash eventually dries up. And then the high-end casinos in the UK have been asking for the ability to give credit to high-end overseas customers as they'd be used to anywhere in the world.
Sure. Didn't they used to be able to do that years and years ago?
They've been pushing for a long time,
yeah,
but
okay.
We haven't made any progress.
Great. So one of the problems that the government had for a long time was, you know, the responsible gaming, but that all was on the online side, correct? I mean the land-based side is a pretty solid RG program.
Yeah, we've always been good at what we do.
Sure.
And I think when you know your customers, you like your customers, you don't want to hurt them.
Sure.
It's slightly different from anonymous online, but to be fair, online's caught up quite a way, and they do have the advantage of total data on all their players.
Sure.
Now, clearly, in the early days of online, you can use that data for negative purposes,
sure,
in the same way you can now use it for positive purposes.
Right.
For us on the offline, we always want our customers to come back. It's absolutely pointless skinning them. There's a wonderful expression, which I'm not allowed to use very often, but it's you can shear a sheep many times, but you can only skin it once.
Yes, right.
And we want our customers to enjoy their time. We want them to spend what they're happy to spend and be comfortable coming back another time. If a customer comes, spends all their money day one, they'll never come back.
Sure.
They've had a bad experience.
Right,
and we want positive, happy experiences.
Well, you know, I've always focused on the entertainment value you have at Hippodrome. You know, I mean, you have that great showroom behind it. You had acts on the stage where, you know, where the gaming floor is. You've had small musicians playing, you know, in some of the other venues there. And it's always about entertainment, right?
Yeah, it's fun. It's a feeling and it's experience.
Right.
I was talking to Bo Bernhard of UNLV yesterday, and he was saying that the casinos have got to realize that they're a bit like Disneyland.
Right.
They've got to keep bringing out new attractions.
Sure.
And I think that's something we've always done intuitively. We're always changing things, always developing, because a building the size of ours, unless you show the customers you're positive, reinvesting and making it interesting to come back to, they're going to start bleeding away.
Right.
And it also enthuses the staff because they love seeing something fun happening.
Right. Sure.
So a bit like Disneyland for adults.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, the impact of Brexit was supposed to hit the gaming industry pretty hard. Has it hit it hard, or is it pretty much
really
on water under the bridge?
Brexit, the negative, that probably the biggest negative is that it's harder to get European staff.
Right.
But a whole load of European staff were already allowed to work in the UK. They had the right to work. But to be fair, on the hospitality side, it's not just British. It's worldwide shortage of hospitality staff. So it's not a Brexit effect.
Okay.
Currently, obviously, the sterling's quite weak. So we're starting to see an increase in tourism, which is a hidden benefit of Brexit.
Right, yeah.
There's plenty of supply chain issues, but they're not Brexit, they're worldwide.
Right.
And I think it's difficult to tell what is Brexit and what is just the after effects of shutting the world economy down, courtesy of COVID.
But you know, I'm looking forward to going over there because of the weakness of the pound.
Yeah,
the dollar's worth that much more now.
It's made it quite expensive. I remember coming here when it was over $2 to the pound.
Right, yeah,
happy days. It's now worth 1-to-1.
Yeah. So are you expecting to see more international visitation because of that?
Oh, definitely. Particularly America. The lead time for American visitors is normally 2 to 3 months. So the drop in sterling should be married with an increase in American visitors.
Sure.
So at Christmas time, which would be quite nice. London is wonderful at Christmas.
Sure, absolutely. I would love to be there then. So when I was there last time, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, you had some sort of online gaming roulette that you were playing downstairs on a real game. And people were betting on online. Is that still operational?
Yeah,
right now?
Absolutely. We've got it's live dealer roulette.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's not coming from a factory in Riga.
Right. Yeah,
it's actually the real table.
Yeah.
And it's proved to be really popular.
Yeah.
And we're looking to do. We've got 2 live roulette tables. We're looking to do a live baccarat table.
Okay.
All with Evolution. And then equally, some of the online games are wonderful, literally evolutions
sure.
of the offline traditional games.
Right.
Their Lightning Roulette is a brilliant product.
Yeah.
And they've turned roulette almost into a game show.
Yeah.
And we're talking with them whether or not we'd start doing some, bringing the online product offline and having
right.
a sort of game show type feel with some of the products.
That's very forward thinking. In fact, I interviewed Todd Householder from Evolution just about a month ago. Just released the podcast, and he was saying the same thing.
Todd's brilliant. He's a complete. His enthusiasm, and passion for what he does is just an example to everybody. But it's also his understanding of what the player wants. I think some parallels.
Well, he comes from the land based side too, so you've got a lot in common there. So. So what's your prospect then for the future of UK gaming at least the Hippodrome and the land based section?
Well, we're certainly going to continue having fun. I've now by getting these last 2 shop units on the front, I've got the vast majority of the building. So the next thing is onwards and upwards, and we are looking to put another floor on the top of the building.
Okay.
To have a big outdoor bar restaurant for about 200 people.
I bet you get great views up there too.
Yeah, right? It's just getting high enough to get views.
Yeah.
So that's in the early stages of development. And my ultimate plan, and everyone knows this, is to have a dinner party in the cupola right at the top.
Really?
I was up there in the summer. The views are stunning.
I'll bet.
And but it's just a bit of a health and safety nightmare to get in and out.
Sure.
So I've got I'll find a way. I'll make a way into it.
Well, that'll be fun. I hope I'm invited to that.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us, Simon. It's great to see you. We'll see you in February, I guess, when we come over for ice.
It'll be the highlight of my week seeing you in London, Roger.
Absolutely. Great to see you.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by IGT, where the cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold and is named Best Slot Product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. Get this top performer on your floor. Learn more at igt.com/prosperitylink. To learn more about the gaming industry in the UK, visit ggbmagazine.com and subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.